So welcome to our monthly Awakening Together membership meeting. I have one thing on the agenda for tonight's meeting, and that is to talk about the Minister Preparation Program. I don't expect that to take up the full hour, so when we are done with that, we can talk about anything you want to talk about. You can ask me questions about anything you want to ask me about. They can be questions about Awakening Together, or if you, you know, have a spiritual question you want to ask me. You know, sometimes people want coaching, that kind of thing. You can do that as well. So we'll talk about the Minister Preparation Program first, and then the rest of the meeting agenda is up to you, whatever you bring to the table. Does that sound good? I do have a link I want to share with you. Let me get over here and grab the link. All right, let's see if... See if I do this right. I've forgotten how to do a lot of things since I've been gone. There you go. You should have a link now. This is a link to a document that I created just a little bit ago, just for this meeting, about the Minister Preparation Program. Some people ask, why become a minister? My first answer is, I don't know. I don't know why I became a minister. I don't know. You know, if something in you is just saying do it, that's the reason why. If there's nothing in you say do it, then don't. I mean, that's my answer. Awakening Together does have a purpose for the ministers. The purpose is for the ministers to be the servants, of the population of the organization. So, you know, the picture that always comes to mind when I think of an Awakening Together minister is the picture of Jesus when he's washing the feet of the disciples. To me, a minister is a servant. That's what a minister is. So the reason, maybe besides just because you feel called to, the reason to become a minister is because you want that humble role of servant. You know, I thought it was interesting. As you know, I recently went to India with Global Volunteers, and I was reading their guidebook on the plane on the way over, and they called us servants as well. They were telling us that as volunteers, we were servants, and that we were there to be helpful and to do whatever was needed. And, you know, it was a wonderful experience being a servant in India. And I would hope that being a servant of Awakening Together would be a wonderful experience as well. So that's kind of the idea behind having ministers. Now, the Minister Preparation Program, hopefully by now you have the attachment open. There is some cost associated with it. Also, you know, there's a time commitment associated with it. There's a work commitment associated with it. You know, there'll be work that you have to do in the first phase about 4 days a week, in the second phase almost daily. So it's not really a decision that one should take lightly. Before one gets involved in the Minister Preparation Program, you just want to be sure this is something that you really want to do. The first step in the Minister Preparation Program, and the handout I gave you may not be completely clear, because like I said, I quickly created it just before coming in here. And you notice it talks about the application. It says, after completing this class, you will be invited to apply for the Minister Preparation Program. The class it's talking about is the Introduction to the Minister Preparation Program. There's a class called Introduction to the Minister Preparation Program. It's a 2-hour class that's offered for free. And what this class does is it talks to you about the commitment of the Minister Preparation Program, exactly what you're committing to, what all of the costs are, what the homework commitment is, the time commitment, all of that, the class commitment, financial commitment. And it also tells you what it means to be a minister of Awakening Together. And the purpose of this 2-hour introductory course is just to help you within yourself to really make a decision about whether you want to do this or not. You know, I just feel it's a lot easier to make a decision when you have the information than it is on some fantasy idea you may have. So it's merely a class that presents all of the information, and then you can make a decision. If, after you've taken the introductory class, if you want to apply for MPP, then you can apply for MPP. There's a $25 application fee that is non-refundable. As far as I know, I guess if somebody really got upset, I would refund it. but primarily, it's a non-refundable application fee. Once you apply, chances are you'll be accepted. I personally cannot right now imagine not accepting someone, but if we did, it would be because there was something obviously wrong. And I don't want to rule out the possibility that somebody could just really be in the wrong place and have the wrong reasons, and that we know that, and it's better just to stop it in the beginning. But for the most part, the application process, I think, is just going to be a technicality. Once you have applied and you have been accepted, you will enter into what is called Phase 1 of the Minister Preparation Program. Phase 1 is a 11-week course called True Discernment. And the purpose of the True Discernment course, most of us have, been trained spiritually through a theology, or maybe through a couple of theologies. And we're very aware of that language, where it's easy for us to understand teachings in that language. But sometimes when we cross over into another language, another set of symbols, we think we're looking at something different when we're not. The purpose of true discernment is to help us transcend theology right away. When the True Discernment course was developed, the purpose was to develop it without any theological teaching whatsoever. And I have recently taught that class to, I think, 8 or 9 people, and they're currently giving me feedback on that, a questionnaire. They haven't all turned the questionnaire in, but so far it does look like most of the people agree that it was a non-theological class, and that was the purpose. So it's about teaching that wisdom that is really clear and pointing towards truth without any theological language or without any theological stories, so that we can get very, very clear on that basic wisdom. Some of the things that are taught in that particular class is how the question, "Who am I?" does two things. One, if that question, "Who am I?" is being asked without our conscious awareness, it actually builds the ego. This goes on for most of us all day, every day, without us noticing. And how, when you take the question, "Who am I?" and you ask it with conscious awareness, it actually starts to undo the ego. So that's part of the teaching in that class. Another part of the teaching in that class is how both time, the perception of time, and the perception of an individual self are actually the same thing. They're a collection of ideas. Neither time nor the individual self is any more than a collection of ideas. Another thing that is taught in that class is how to use journaling effectively to look at your own collection of ideas and to learn to see beyond them, to learn to see them clearly, to learn to transcend them. Another thing that is in that class is the difference between a belief and truth. Many of us don't realize it, that we have many, many beliefs that we think are truth. And so we're going to look very clearly at what is the difference between a belief and truth. Because part of the problem is, if I think that my beliefs are truth, when actually they're just my beliefs, then I also see you as wrong when you have a different belief. I need to get clarity on the difference between a truth and a belief. So that's taught in that course. So those are a few examples of the types of things that are taught in the True Discernment course. After the True Discernment course, there is a test, and the True Discernment exam has a $25 fee, and you are required to pass the exam with at least a 75%. Everyone that took it in this last class that we had got 92 and above. So everyone, if we were in school, everybody would have got an A. There was one question that people had a little more trouble with, and I'm going to change that one question because one-third of the class had trouble with it. But for the most part, everybody did really well on it. So 75% typically should not be a problem. But if someone does have trouble, they're allowed to get feedback on what they missed, and then they're allowed to take it again. And if they still have trouble, then I can give them a specific plan where they can kind of brush up and prepare before they take it again. So three tries before you actually are told you haven't passed. So I don't think anybody will ever have a problem with the test, but I know some people freak out at the word test. One reason we have tests, David is saying don't forget the oral, but I'm not 100% certain we'll do it. We have to test it. We've also written an oral test because some people are afraid of the written test, but we haven't validated the oral test yet. So I'm not certain about the oral test yet. So it's possible there'll be an optional oral test, but we have to complete that validation process first. One reason that there's a test, what many of you may not be aware of, is that there are laws in our country about what makes a valid minister program and therefore a valid minister and what doesn't. And those laws vary by state. For instance, in Colorado, the laws are extremely lenient, and it's very, very easy to be a legal minister in the state of Colorado. But some states, if I remember correctly, like New York, Virginia, I think maybe Maine, they have much more stringent laws. And when we wrote our minister preparation program, we wrote it to the most stringent laws in the country. So no matter where you go, if you're a minister, the fact that you're a minister will be valid. It meets the laws of that state. And, testing is just one of the things that we were looking at a consultant's recommendations on how to meet all the laws. Testing is one of the things the consultant recommended. So that's why we have tests. We were just meeting what was recommended to us by a consultant. So no other reason. Once you pass the test for phase one, you can then sign up for phase two. Now, phase two is a whole bunch of different classes. Phase two is also, I'm going to say more advanced than phase one, in that in phase one, you are learning what we're calling true discernment, this non-theological teaching, right, that's in all of the teachings. You're learning that. You're being taught something, and you're learning it. In phase two, you're now being asked to exercise that discernment, to use it. And we're going to be taking you through a lot of different teachings, and some of these teachings are sometimes going to conflict. You know, like we may take one class where we're taught that, you know, the difference between meditation and concentration, and based on that definition, we're told that meditation is good and helpful to awakening, and concentration is not. And then the very next class you go into, you may be taught that concentration is absolutely necessary and that it's very important, and here's how to do it. So we're going to be going through where the first class, True Discernment, was non-theological. The second groups of classes, phase two, is going through a lot of different theologies. So now this is where you're going to have to take your non-theological discernment and you're going to have to apply it. And there's really two ways to apply it as well. Not only what is best for you, right, but when may a particular practice or a particular teaching be helpful? Because as a minister, you may be put in a position where you need to coach people that are in different places than you, have different misperceptions than you, have different needs than you. And in a way, you need to be able to kind of diagnose which teaching is going to be most helpful to this person. So you may find, for example, with the concentration meditation example, that for some people, at certain phases in where they are, concentration is exactly what's needed. But you may see that other people have taken concentration way too seriously and way too far, and it's time for them, you know, they've kind of gotten to this control mode, and it's time for them to let go of concentration and move into this other practice that is called true meditation. And so you need to be able to use your non-theological true discernment to read through all of these theologies without prejudice, to see the usefulness in all these different tools. All of these paths that we're going to study have taken people to awakening. There are masters that have awakened in every one of these paths. Therefore, they're all useful, although they may be very different to you. So you need to use your discernment to look and see, where is the usefulness in this? When may this be useful for someone? When may this be useful for me? When is it taken too far and it loses its usefulness? So phase two is applying the discernment you learned in phase one. Now, if you look in the handout that I gave you on page two, you will see the phase two curriculum, which I will read for the recording, because I guess I can put this link with the recording too, but I'll read this for the recording. First of all, you'll notice there is a fee for each class. Basically, the fee is $20 a week. So if it's a 3-week class, you know, it's $60. If it's an 8-week class, it's $160. That's how it works out. Also, in most cases, there will be a book that you need to buy. You'll probably buy the book in most cases from Amazon. In some cases, you'll be able to buy the book from us, like the Keys to NTI and Inner Ramana. And in some cases, I might be able to, in a couple of cases, I've been able to find the book online as a free PDF. So people who are interested in that, I can give you the link. But if you look, you'll notice that one of the classes you'll take is True Meditation, using a book by Adyashanti. And that's a 3-week course, so it's $60. Another class is the Bhagavad Gita, another 3-week class. Tao Te Ching, that's a 4-week class. I'm looking at the Stephen Mitchell translation. Introduction to Buddhist Teachings, and we're going to use the Heart of Buddhist Teachings by Thich Nhat Hanh. Understanding Purification, and we're going to use the Untethered Soul, although I just saw a typo in the book. I'll have to go back and fix that. It says the Untethered Soul. The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. Introduction to Jesus of the New Testament, and we will be using the New Testament. We're actually going to read the book of Mark and the book of John. Introduction to NTI, and we'll use the keys to NTI. Introduction to Sufi Thought. We're going to use the Sufi Book of Life by Neil Douglas Klotz. Introduction to Kabbalah. We'll use The Way by Michael Berg. The Teachings of Ramana Maharshi. We'll use the Spiritual Teaching of Ramana Maharshi. The author did not put his name on the book, although I know his name, but I can't recall it right now. But it's not on the book anyway. The Teachings of Nisargadatta Maharaj. We'll use I Am That. Same author, by the way, as the Teachings of Ramana Maharshi. Introduction to A Course in Miracles. We're going to use Living A Course in Miracles by John Mundy. The Teachings of Inner Ramana. We'll use, of course, the Teachings of Inner Ramana. And then the last class, Being an Awakening Together Minister, and that's a book I'll develop, so there'll be nothing to buy. So that is the full curriculum. Now, if you take the classes just one after another, and you never take a break, the curriculum takes about 1.5 years to complete. If you choose to take it more slowly, you choose to take breaks, we actually recommend you try to complete it within 3 years, but you actually can take up to 5 years to complete the entire curriculum if you want to. That's the overview of the Minister Preparation Program. Now, what I want to do is I want to start offering that 2-hour free introductory class that you need to take before you can apply. I want to start offering that this month. Now, originally, we were going to have on our members' site, we were going to have a way to register for the curriculum and all that, but our members' site isn't ready yet. So I was looking at, you know, what's the best way for me to make this available to you in a very simple way, and I think the best way is for me just to put it on our regular website underneath events. And, of course, when I get it on there, which I hope to do this week, the dates and the times, what I will do is I will make a post on Awakening Together News, and if you get the daily updates, you'll get that daily update, and you'll know that the dates and times have been posted, and you can register. Hold on one second. I need a drink. So I'd like to offer the free 2-hour introductory class throughout December and January. And then in February, begin offering Phase 1, the True Discernment class. So that means we're going to be getting started pretty quickly. And that's really all I have to say about it, unless you have questions. So before we open up the floor to any topic, first let's see if we've finished with this topic. So does anybody have any questions? Here we go. If you don't want to be a minister, can you pay to take a class of interest? Absolutely. Thank you for asking that question. If you're an Awakening Together member, you can take any of the classes, including all of the classes, without becoming a minister. You would just be auditing the class. You would still pay, but you would be auditing the class. You also would not necessarily have the same homework requirements. However, I do want to say this is just personal, but I really recommend the homework. I think the homework is where the most value comes from. So you wouldn't have to take it, but I think that you would be missing something. But you certainly wouldn't have to take the tests and that kind of thing. So the requirements are not going to be as stringent on someone who's just taking the class out of interest. But you can take any or all of them. David Hempel says, do you have to take True Discernment before you audit a class? If so, can I share in the class? You do not have, if you're just auditing, you don't have to do anything. If, for example, the only thing you want to take is the Sufi class, you can take that, assuming there's a space open. Now, I will tell you this. We're teaching these classes in a private Pal Talk room, and private Pal Talk rooms are limited to the number of people you can have in them. We're going to have 2 teachers per class. That way, if I'm one of the teachers, if I happen to be traveling to Costa Rica, the other teacher can cover for me. We don't have to cancel class because I'm not around, right? So we'll have 2 teachers per class, so the teachers use up 2 of the spots, which means there's only room for 8 people per class because the limit in the room is 10. Pal Talk won't let any more in. So one thing that the auditors will be, of course, they only get if space is available. So that's one thing to keep in mind. People who are truly going to be a minister will have first shot at the seats. But whenever a class is not full, you'll be able to audit the class, and you don't have to take them in any certain order. And David, I don't understand your second question. If so, can I share in the class? Oh, you mean can you talk? Like if you're auditing, can you participate in the class? Is that what you mean? The answer is yes. Yes, absolutely. You can participate in the class. Yeah. I have no problem with that. Yeah, you can participate in the class to the fullest extent whenever you're auditing. You aren't required to hold back because you're not trying to be a minister. Are there any other questions about the Minister Preparation Program? Does it start February 1? I don't know if it's February 1. I'm just going to say in February. I haven't looked at, I haven't actually got it scheduled yet. I don't even know what day of the week February 1 is. I think that the one that I'm going to be teaching, and when I say I think, that means I'm not sure. I think that the class I'm going to be teaching is going to be on Thursday nights, from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time. I think that's the slot that's going to work well for me, but that could change. And then there may be some others. If we have enough people interested, we may have some others teaching in another time slot. One thing you guys could do if you are interested, because we haven't scheduled these yet, is feel free to send me an email and let me know when you would like to see the classes offered, and we'll see if we can and do that. If you have multiple times that are available, you know, let us know multiple times. I have no problem looking at when you would like to attend and seeing if we can accommodate. Of course, I can't promise anything, but feel free to email me, ReginaDawnAkers@yahoo.com. So if you know that you're interested and you want to share your availability and see if we can schedule within that, please write to me. If you're already a minister, can I re-minister without causing red tape confusion? I think that you asked this question before, Rev Wayne, and so I took it back to the team, because one thing we do in Awakening Together, at least we want to do in Awakening Together, is we don't make decisions like this alone. No person, like not even I, can make a decision alone. We take it to the team. The entire team looks at it. We make a decision together. So you had asked a question before about if you're already a minister. And what we had decided was, what the team decided was, I think, I need to go back and look at this. The way my memory says is that everyone has to take phase one. Even if you're already a minister, you have to take phase one, because that's where we're getting the non-theological discernment that we'll all share. But if you are already a minister, you can share with me the curriculum you went through to become a minister. And if there are things in our phase two curriculum that you seem to already know, then I can excuse you from those classes. So you might have a shorter curriculum depending on the curriculum you took before. Now, some people become ministers without any real curriculum. You know, they sign up on the internet and they they get a certificate. Those people, of course, would still have to take all of phase two. But if you've been through a legitimate program of study, and you can show me what that legitimate program of study was, like if you're a Course in Miracles minister, I might say, well, you know what? You can skip this Course in Miracles class, because for you that would just be a rehash, and you won't have to take that. So hopefully that answers your question. As you offer new classes, will you list each class somewhere and the teacher? Yeah, for now, as long as we do not have a member's website, I will list this on our regular website under the events. It will be listed just like all of our retreats and pilgrimages are. Plus, I will make announcements using Awakening Together News, so you'll get it in your daily update. So I will list these things. Once we get the member website up, we hope to have a place on the member website where the entire minister preparation program is housed. All the schedule is there, the way to register, everything is there. That vision just hasn't come true yet. So for now, I'll use the events menu on our regular website. Any other questions? Okay, well, if other questions pop up in your mind, feel free to email me at ReginaDawnAkers@yahoo.com, and I will answer your questions that way, because I know that maybe all of your questions just haven't shown up yet. All right, so at this point then, we have 30 minutes to go, and what I would like to do is open up the meeting to anything at all that you want to discuss or anything at all that you want to ask. Like I said, it can be a question about Awakening Together, about our policies, about our plans, about our problems. or if you would really like some spiritual coaching, if, you know, every now and then people just feel stuck on something and they feel like they want a little bit of help, and sometimes I'm the one they want to ask for help. If you happen to be in that position, here I am. If you're willing to ask in front of everyone, which is great if you are, because often people have the same question somewhere in them, then you may also ask those types of questions while we have this spare now 29 minutes. How do I sound, Paul? I see you're saying get some rest. How do I sound? Am I sounding worse as I sit here talking longer? and the night gets cooler, or do I still sound okay? I sound bad? Well, I actually feel pretty good. Today's the first day that I have fully felt good. Ever since I've been home, I have not felt good. Physically, I've not felt well. So you know how it is when you don't feel well, and then you start feeling well again. It feels pretty nice. But I know I still sound pretty bad. Any questions at all? Okay, a question on judgment. When you see something like a murder or a really intolerable remark, how do you respond if you are trying not to judge? That's a very good question, Barbara. Chances are, unless you have already transcended judgment to at least a strong degree, chances are the judgment in your mind is just going to happen. So it's kind of interesting when we talk about letting go of judgment, because on the one hand, you can't. You know, the judgment just shows up. When we talk about letting go of judgment, what we really mean is don't take the ball and run with it. So the judgment shows up, you know, because of the murder or the intolerable remark. But when you're letting go of judgment, what you want to do then is, instead of just running with that judgment and reacting in whatever way you would typically react when you're believing a judgment, you want to step back and look at it. By look at the judgment, I mean, you know, look at it with the part of you that realizes no judgment is helpful. You know, there's a part of you that knows that. A Course in Miracles calls that the Holy Spirit. But again, that's theological language. But the part of you that knows no judgment is helpful, you want to look at that judgment. And it's very, very possible that some judgments will not only be a thought in the mind, but they're going to have strong emotions with them. And you also just want to watch and allow those emotions. Some of the mistakes we make when we're trying to let go of judgment is judging the fact that a judgment has shown up in the mind. So, you know, somebody says something and the mind automatically judges that someone, and then I judge the fact that the judgment showed up. I try to pretend like I didn't judge, maybe. I try to deny that there was a judgment in the mind. All of these resistances are not at all helpful to letting go of judgment. The most helpful thing is to be absolutely honest within yourself. You know, you really don't even have to tell anyone else. You only have to be absolutely honest within yourself. Within yourself, say, you know, boy, I see that judgment. I feel a strong attraction to believe that judgment. In fact, it even seems to me like that judgment might be right. You know, like I might be right to hold this judgment. And then after admitting to that experience, then remember what you want, right? Then say, but what I really want is to let go of judgment, you know? And depending on how attached you are to that judgment, sometimes, but just by remembering what I really want is to let go of judgment, the judgment will just go on right then. Because the truth is, if we do not attach to a thought, all thoughts come and go. It's actually natural for a thought to come and go. When a thought comes and stays, it's because we've attached to it. So sometimes just remembering, I don't want this, is enough to release the attachment and the thought will go. And sometimes you'll be over it just like that. Sometimes, because you believe that you're right, changing your mind about it doesn't necessarily release the attachment. But what you can do when you change your mind about it is you can choose now to be still with your emotions, just be with your realization that you don't want this judgment, and what I strongly recommend is not act on it. And in fact, right now I am reading Michael Singer's book because it is one of the books that I'm writing the MPP program with. And Michael Singer also strongly recommends not acting on it. You know, whenever we act on a judgment, we actually strengthen it within ourselves. And that is the opposite of our purpose. So even if our emotions are really loud, even if the yelling in our head is really loud, the best position for us to take is just watching that within ourselves and doing nothing, right? And doing nothing. So let me know if you have any more questions around that. And if you want to take the mic, put up your hand. But that's my answer to the question as it was written. Let's see. What good does a judgment do me when it puts me in a pain body? Totally. Sounds very much like the Inner Ramana teaching we had a little bit ago. Judgment always rests on the past, for past experience is the basis on which you judge. Judgment becomes impossible without the past, of Course in Miracles. How would I talk to my kids about murder, especially of the kind you mentioned? That's a damn good question, and I don't have an answer quite yet, so let me be still for a moment, please. A part of the answer to the question really depends on what's happening with the children at the time. So there isn't really an answer that can be given, because the exact circumstance needs to happen. If, for example, the children are afraid, if they somehow see something on TV that scares them, then of course, one conversation you may want to have with the children is that is something that happened somewhere else, but let them know how safe they are in this house, how loved they are, how nothing like that, is going to happen in this family. It's always helpful to let people know that whenever anybody does anything in the world, it's because they're believing thoughts in their mind, and that some people have very strong thoughts that are not at all true or not at all right, but they believe those thoughts anyway and they act out on them. And when you tell somebody that, you're still kind of explaining what happened, but you're not judging. That's a non-judgmental explanation of what happened. Someone believed their thoughts and they acted on them. Beyond that, I would say, Reverend Stills, that, check with your own intuition in the moment. Know your kids, know what their concerns are, know their perceptions, and know yourself. Know if you're in your non-judgmental mind. Always speak honestly, directly, and non-judgmentally, and of course assure your children they're loved and safe if they're afraid. Let's see, David, help me to ask them what they think. When I work with my little cousin, I ask him what he thinks. That's a great idea, David. Get their point of view out on the floor. What is fear like and why? What is it for? Answer this for them, Paul is saying. Yeah. It is funny because in this world, it does appear we still need to teach our children things like not getting in the cars with strangers, those types of things. But, depending on how you can do that as just a wisdom teaching, like look both ways before you cross the street, right? Or you can put a lot of fear in them. And this really all depends on your attitude. I mean, we teach our children all kinds of safety rules, Don't stand on a chair with wheels. you might fall. I remember with Jasmine when she was little, I had this little song I would sing for her about holding my hand in the parking lot. And the song even had the consequences of what might happen if she ran, but it did it in such a playful way, it didn't cause fear. Let me just sing the little song for you with my cold voice. It'll probably sound terrible, but here we go. Hold my hand in the parking lot. Hold my hand in the parking lot. Hold my hand in the parking lot. If you don't, you might get squished by a car. So, it taught her the consequences, right? I mean, this is what might happen if you go running off in a parking lot. But it didn't do it in a fearful way. So we can teach our children to be safe, We can even teach our children about, you know, possible consequences of not being safe, like just running after the ball in the street without looking first, without being fearful. And that's really going to come from our attitude. Yeah, so. Hold my hand in the parking lot. She loved that song. Of course, now she rolls her eyes when I sing it. I sing it every now and then now just to tease her. I notice Monica keeps asking what happened a few Wednesdays ago or whatever, and I have no idea, Monica, but I can tell you there's been a lot of drama in the room lately and a lot of drama on Facebook. And, you know, the story is, you know, Awakening Together has etiquette that we ask people to follow when they're in the room. And we also have a policy, you know, for what to do if someone comes in and is not following the etiquette. And basically what the policy says is the first thing, because, you know, people may not even know about the etiquette. This is a public room. People can pop in from anywhere. And so if they pop in and they're not following the etiquette, first step is to let them know there is etiquette and give them a link to the etiquette and to ask them to read it. Then if someone continues to not be in accordance with that etiquette, our next step is to, you know, address them directly and say, you know, so-and-so, you know, we have etiquette that says, you know, for example, let's say that they were telling the person speaking, you know, you're stupid, you don't know what you're talking about, you know, whatever, Jesus is Christ, you know, why are you saying something different? Jesus is the Savior, why are you saying something different? You know, we might say, you know, our etiquette is in this room that, you know, we allow the speaker to have their point of view, their teaching. You know, we respect the speaker and we do not tell the speaker that they're wrong. And right now you're in violation of that. So, you know, please let go of your comments. If the person continues, then we'll let them know, you know, because you continue to be in violation of our etiquette, we need to bounce you. So you'll be bounced from the room, and then we let them know how they can request to be unbounced. That's the way the policy is currently written. I have to review the policy myself, but what the policy says is, you know, once somebody is let back in the room, you know, if they continue to not be aligned with the etiquette, the same process you go through, the warnings and all that, and then bounce. And you know, this can happen a number of times. But what the policy says is if somebody brings their self to the attention of the admins by being bounced a number of times, that the admin committee, there's supposed to be a committee of admins, will meet, discuss the situation, and decide if the person should be banned from the room for a temporary period of time up to 6 months, no longer than 6 months. And the admin committee is supposed to decide this together by discussing it. Well, to be honest, what has been happening in the room is that the policy hasn't been followed. People have been bounced without being communicated with. People have been banned without, you know, without being bounced. People have been banned without anything being discussed by an admin committee. And it's led to a lot of conflict. Now, on the one hand, that's true. But notice I said that was a story. Okay, because on the one hand, that is all true. And, you know, as the president minister of Awakening Together, I have a meeting with my team tomorrow, and we're going to discuss, you know, our part, what we did wrong, and what we need to do to correct ourselves. We are going to discuss that, and we're going to look at it together, and where do we go from here? So I have no intention of just ignoring our errors. I know that we made mistakes, and we're going to look into that. However, if we take this teaching seriously, this teaching from this room, the fact that this stuff has been occurring is not the real cause of the conflict. The real cause of the conflict is judgment. That is exactly what the real cause of the conflict is. I can tell you from a very honest perspective that if I was a person in the room who was, you know, said something and then banned from the room. I would do one or two things. I would write and ask why was I banned and see if I could get some understanding, or I would just say, you know, whatever, and I would just go away. I would not start pushing harder, you know, to see, you know, how much further I could push these people. I would not be on Facebook making lots and lots of posts. This is not, you know, I'm not saying that the errors were right, but all of this drama is not coming from the error. This drama is coming from non-acceptance or judgment, just like we talked about in the Inner Ramana Hour. You can either be in judgment or you can be in acceptance and being. And this drama is coming from being in judgment. I also think, and I'll find out more details tomorrow, that the inappropriate, because I think the word I was trying to say isn't a real word, the inappropriate bouncing and banning that has happened, I think also, in many cases, came from judgment. I think that from not being, I think that there are mistakes happening everywhere. I know this because people have told me. I know that there are people that are coming in here and purposefully breaking the etiquette just because they don't like etiquette. You know, that again, that is judgment. If I was in a place that had a set of guidelines, well, typically when I am in a place that has a set of guidelines, I follow them. You know, like when I go into a mosque, I cover my head and take off my shoes because that's their guidelines. I don't say, hey, I shouldn't have to take off my shoes or hey, I shouldn't have to cover my head, right? So typically I respect the guidelines and follow them. Yeah, when in Rome. But if I really am not in favor of the guidelines, if it doesn't feel right for me, you know, I'm just not in that place. And so there's a lot of stuff going on right now, a lot of drama, people arguing, you know, all different point of views, and everybody's in judgment. Nobody's in acceptance and being. And so they're all pointing fingers. They're saying, you know, it's Awakening Together's fault because they have etiquette, or Awakening Together is pointing fingers and it's saying it's their fault because they're rebels. And I'm just saying all of this is a mistake. All of it is an error. Everyone's in judgment. And I can't control anyone at all. I can be as honest as I can be, which is what I'm doing right now. I can talk to my team, which is what I'll do tomorrow, and I can watch my own mind. Some people say the future of Awakening Together is at risk. One person has even said if he has anything to do with it, Awakening Together will not survive. You know, I have no idea. I have no idea. All we can do is take this one step at a time and see what happens. It does appear to me, from my perception, that the people who are involved in the drama, although the drama is quite loud, the people who are involved in the drama are relatively few compared to the number of people that are in Awakening Together. We have 226 members. I don't think I've even counted 26 people involved in the drama. It's much, much less than that. So, and again, everybody that's involved in the drama doesn't realize that they're being involved in drama, because everybody is caught up in that idea, I'm right and they're wrong, and no one's really seen this yet. And, of course, I can't, you know, I mean, I will talk to my team because I get to do that, because I'm the president minister. But as far as people who are not on my team, I really can't even tell them that they're mistaken, because they'll just, you know, they don't, you know, it's not my place. It's not my place to correct them. So I let them have their perceptions. If they ask a question in a way that really feels, you know, legitimate and not just, you know, sometimes if you watch these posts, you can tell that sometimes they're really asking questions just because they're trying to kind of entrap me or whatever. And, you know, when that kind of game playing is going on, I just don't respond. But when I can tell there's a question there that's a legitimate question, I answer. Otherwise, my practice right now is not to respond, not to defend, and also in my own mind, not to judge. I'm not judging the people on my team who may have made mistakes in the way they were bouncing and banning. I just see that mistakes happened and we need to talk. I'm not judging the people who came into the room and were, you know, possibly trying to push the rules on purpose. You know, I just see that they're doing what, you know, they're believing their thoughts. You know, they're believing their thoughts and they're acting on them. And I'm staying very, what I perceive to be very true to myself, in that I'm watching my mind and being honest within myself, realizing I don't know the answers here. Also realizing I don't want to try and control the situation. That would be foolish. I did have one person suggest that, Regina, you should come into this room more. You should watch more. You should, you know, do more. And, you know, I don't feel called to try and take control. This is going to be a success or it's not going to be a success. And, you know, for me to try and take control, that's just to reinforce my ego. I'm also not doing nothing. Like I said, I am talking to my team. I am being honest, you know, with myself. But to come in here with a trying to have the strongest arm, you know, to be trying to be more strong-armed than the admins and more strong-armed than the, you know, the people who are coming in and, you know, possibly rebelling and to be the biggest one of all and win, that's just not, I'm not going to do that. You know, I would rather resign as minister and go get another job. I'm not here to reinforce my ego. That has nothing to do with why Awakening Together started. And yeah, Cher is saying Jesus had the same problem, and I do realize that. In fact, these kinds of challenges are actually quite common. Mother Teresa, you know, we all know Mother Teresa and how she went to India and how helpful she was in India, but if you go back and watch the movie of her life, you'll see that when she first showed up in India and started being helpful, there were riots and protests, and, you know, they were very much against her being there, taking the dead off the street and giving the dead a place to die in peace. So conflict is not necessarily, you know, I mean, for some reason it happens. I don't quite understand why, but I don't need to understand it. But I also don't know that it isn't supposed to happen. I mean, I was looking at that today, like, you know, a part of my mind, I mean, you know, I still have a human mind here. And, you know, I went to India and I had this wonderful 3 weeks of flow in India. And then I came back and I was bombarded with phone calls and emails. And it was like, shit, you know, I don't need this. You know, part of me wanted to just quit right then, pull the plug right then, you know, walk away. It's like, I don't need this. So, but as I looked at that further, you know, to say that this conflict isn't supposed to happen is another judgment. You know, I don't know that much. I don't know that this conflict isn't supposed to happen. In fact, if you trust Byron Katie, she would say, well, I know it's supposed to happen because it is happening. So remember what we talked about, for those of you who are in the room, you know, for the last hour when we were doing the teachings of Inner Ramana. Did I cuss? I'm sorry, I didn't hear myself cuss. Please, I got to whisper, please remember not to cuss. And it's true, we're not supposed to cuss. And I apologize if I did. I didn't even hear myself. That is against our etiquette, and I really didn't mean to do it. And now I forgot what I was saying. Oh, I know what I was saying. You know, in the teaching that we were listening to, the teaching of Inner Ramana prior to this hour, we talked about, you know, you can be in one of two positions. You can be in judgment, or you can be in acceptance and being. Acceptance, beingness being one thing. You can maybe hyphenate it. Acceptance, beingness. And those are my choices in this circumstance. You know, I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no idea if everyone else is ever going to let go of their judgments or if everyone else is going to go to war and fight each other and fight each other until this whole thing blows up. Or if the whole thing is going to calm down and Awakening Together is going to go on and be really helpful and something that those of us who are involved with appreciate. I have no idea. But what I do know is that I have the choice to either go into judgment and join the war, or, no matter what happens, to practice that acceptance being. And my choice is to practice that acceptance being. I remember I was talking to a friend of mine, Cher, you know her, Pelk Young. You remember Pelk Young? Of course you do. I was talking to Pelk Young once, and we used to talk every week on the phone. She was kind of a mentor of mine at the time. And I remember she and I made a commitment to each other. And the commitment was that we would never forget that what you really do is awaken alone. That, you know, you can't expect everyone else to join you in letting go of judgments. You can't expect everyone else to join you in that. Remember, the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself or herself. So I have to be willing to awaken completely alone. Now, actually, I think it's great if I don't. You all understand that. I'd love to see everyone choose the right mind. I'd love to see everyone choose acceptance beingness instead of judgment. But I can't make it happen. And if I'm all caught up in what you're choosing, I'm actually in judgment myself, right? So no matter what happens here, whether Awakening Together goes on to be the vision that I had a year ago, last December, which seemed to me to be a very beautiful vision and worth pursuing, or whether Awakening Together turns out to be a great big giant fight and blows up in the next week or month or year, my choice is the same, and that's the acceptance beingness. Trust all things. So, Monica, that was my answer to what happened last Wednesday night. Like I said, I don't really know, but I have a feeling it has to do with all of that etiquette drama stuff. So, Barbara Siegel says she was doing a teaching when inappropriate behavior happened, and she did the work the next morning to figure out why she was so angry. And in the end, it was extremely helpful for her to see where the anger came from. And it really wasn't the person who was so inappropriate. Yeah, and some people are asking, of course, I have 2 minutes left, so I'll say this quickly. Some people are asking the question now, why do we have etiquette? The best answer I have to that is that it feels right. It felt right to me and the other 10 people that are on the team that make the decisions at Awakening Together. But, you know, I know that we kind of have two choices here. We have the choice of not having etiquette and allowing people to really say anything they want in the room and be any way they want in the room. And if we do that, then what's going to happen is some people will use it for the healing of their own mind, right? And always take advantage of what's being said to let go of things in their mind, like Barbara Siegel did the other night, like I've always done, to be perfectly honest. But other people will be offended, put off, afraid. They'll leave. They'll be afraid to take the mic, all of that. So that's what's going to happen if we allow everything, right? So some people will use it for healing. It will put some people out. You know, they'll be afraid of it. Danielle, for example, will never take the mic. She's laughing because she knows it's true. The other possibility is that we have etiquette because we're saying we know that the world stuff comes up for you in the world all of the time. This is a safe place where you can come. You can trust that you won't be attacked here, and you can share whatever it is you need to share to look at what's going on with you in the world. And there will be people like Danielle who will begin to recognize this is a safe environment and will begin to come here and work through with us all the stuff that's going on out there in the world where it's not yet a safe environment for them, but they have this one safe place where they can come and talk about it, right? And at the same time, we're going to lose people. We're going to lose those who don't want to follow the etiquette. So either way, the same thing is going to happen. We're going to lose the people who like the way it is, and we're going to gain some people and retain some people who do like the way it is. It's the same both ways. So the question is simply for me and my team, what feels best for us? What is the environment that we really feel Awakening Together is to be? And if you look at our core values and we're asked Our job, our charter, is to make all of our decisions based on our core values. And if you look at our core values, one thing they emphasize over and over again is respect, allowing people to be where they are, right? And all of that. And so our etiquette comes from us really feeling that is the environment we are to have. We are to provide the gentler environment in here. Now, I agree, the way the bannings and the balancings have been going on is not gentle. It has not been the way it's meant to be, and as I said, I will address that. But the vision is gentle, and there may still be people who just don't want that, and those people may leave. But like I said, if we allowed the anything goes, we lose the people who need gentle. So it's just a matter of what feels best. There's no choice we can make where people will come into the room and we'll always retain them. So that's it. I actually went 2 minutes over, so please forgive me. I'm letting go of the mic. Good night.